The Brother-Sister Fable by Allison Grauer. Once upon a time, there was a family that lived in a white house on the edge of a great and winding wood. There was a mother, and a father, of course, and a daughter, and a son. The trees behind their house blended into a forest uneven from the rocky ground it grew upon. The little mountain that rose even higher beyond the wood confounded bicycles and cars alike, allowing only for travelers on foot to pass over its peak. When the summer's bright green canopy began to fade, the trees gained their true dress of fall as only trees in New England can, transforming into a vast mural of aging gold and crimson, flame-bright orange, and pale butter yellow. Their ordinary, leafy, verdant uniform was just a placeholder for the luxurious garb of autumn. It was this time of year that the light breezes of summer's end changed, growing colder against the warmth of the dying days, and as the leaves changed, the mystery winds began to blow. Every year, when the mystery winds began to blow, the children felt their hearts turn toward the mountain, though they never knew why. It was the way springtime inspires some folks to travel or try new things, or the way New Year's instructs adults to rewrite their goals and begin new challenges. That was the way of it, but there was no challenge, no inspiration, just a cool, dark, strange need to look up at the mountain at night and to listen to the mystery winds in the trees. Now, this brother and sister who lived with their parents in the white house at the foot of the mountain were much like any other children in the neighborhood. They often ventured into the woods of their backyard and found the deer trails to wander. They knew which berries were good and which were poison, and they knew that chewing on twigs from a mint bush was far better than stealing gum from a store. They knew that sitting still in the crux of a birch tree was the best place for you to actually see the birds that were singing and hear the trees talking. One day, the brother went off with some neighbor boys into the woods, simply to take a walk. It soon became a lengthy and lonely hike, however, and they wandered all afternoon on the lower parts of the mountain until one of the boys finally acknowledged that they were probably quite lost.
"I think we've lost the path," said Jake.
"No, we haven't lost it," replied Kyle, the elder of the two. "We just left it back there."
He pointed into the woods. The quiet brother stayed quiet.
"We should stay here until someone comes to get us," said Jake. "There's no one looking for us, stupid."
"No, we have to find our own way home."
Kyle shook his head firmly.
"I'm going this way."
"No, don't,"
Jake cried.
"Mom said if we ever got lost to just stay in one place."
The brother nodded his own head in agreement, and Jake pointed at him.
"See, he agrees with me."
Kyle rolled his eyes.
"She meant that in the city, dummy. Like at the mall or on a field trip or something, not in the woods."
The brother thought he saw something in the trees, a dark shape far off on the hill above them. He did not say anything, but stared at it, waiting for it to move again.
"Mom said stay put," whined Jake. "Stay here then. Be a baby. See if I care."
Kyle stomped off into the woods, winding his way back toward where he thought the houses were. Jake called his name several more times before Kyle vanished completely, and it was just Jake and the brother standing on the crunchy dead leaves. They walked until they found a rock to sit on, and sat for what felt like hours, until Jake finally stood up.
"We should have gone with Kyle," he said angrily. "You should have said something."
The brother stared past Jake into the trees. The afternoon light was beginning to cast longer shadows now, and the warmth of the day was fading. The dark shape up on the hill was still there. The brother pointed toward the thing on the hill, but Jake crossed his arms angrily and turned his back to the trees.
"You're a dummy. And a scaredy cat. I'm going home now."
The brother furrowed his brow, worried at this.
"Ugh, don't you ever talk? Stupid."
Jake began to walk away. Something big crunched in the woods behind them, like a large branch being snapped from a tree. Both boys looked at each other and froze, the unspoken question written on their faces. What in the world was that?
"I can't just sit here anymore."
He bolted away without looking back, and the little brother was left alone on the boulder, wondering how long until dark. or until the black shadow on the hill came for him. He fell asleep on the rock, like Rip Van Winkle, and let the trees whisper around him in the slanting sunlight. In this version of the tale, both Kyle and Jake found their way home after more walking through the woods, arriving with scraped knees and messy tears staining their frightened faces. The little brother did not return. Hours had gone by when the sister came into the house, and her mother asked where her brother was. "I don't know," said the sister with a shrug. "I was climbing trees with Sarah." The father came into the house, and the mother asked him where the brother was.
"I don't know," said the father with a frown. "I was in town at the bookshop."
Mother put her hand to her head and thought very hard about where the brother could be, and then she and the father went out of the house to ask the neighbors if they had seen the brother. The sister sat on the front porch, waiting, certain that her quiet little brother would turn up any minute covered in dirt and grass stains. She watched as her parents and the other adults in the neighborhood searched the backyards, walking back and forth from house to house. She watched the fathers running their hands over their heads worriedly, and the mothers pressing their palms to their mouths in soundless distress. She saw her parents panicking and crying, and watched the policemen come and go, asking questions and going out into the woods with dogs to look. He must still be out there. He must be coming home. But the brother did not return that night, and the police did not find him with their dogs and searchlights. That night, as the sister lay awake in bed wondering where her brother was, she heard the wolves come down from the hill, their howls and yips growing louder and louder. She got up and went to the window, peeping through the sheer curtains, and saw the lean, shaggy canines tumbling and chasing each other in the street outside the house. One of the wolves snapped its head up and stared at her in the dark, the dim light from the street lamp reflecting eerily in its eyes. It parted its lips, baring sharp teeth, and panted in an unsettling smile. Several other wolves looked over at her too, their eyes gleaming, their grins amused. The sister shut the curtains again and went back to bed, hot tears of confusion spilling down her cheeks. What if he never comes back? She dreamed that night about the mountain, saw it stretching higher and further away from her, and in her dream she could not remember her brother's face. Years passed, and the leaves changed and fell away again. The mystery winds blew, the harvest moon rose like an enormous will-o'-the-wisp over the mountain, and the snows came. Bears lumbered through the backyards, deer passed by, and wolves played in the street at night, laughing at the fear of the neighbors. The parents were never quite the same after the brother disappeared. The mother was stricken with grief and threw herself into her work, and the father grew somber and stoic, rarely laughing or smiling. The sister grew older still, and she was not afraid of the mystery winds or of the great harvest moon. When the wolves yipped and howled at night, she would spring from her bed and run to the window to catch a glimpse of them. She would meet their gleaming stares with her own hard gaze, and she would scowl until they were out of sight. When the shimmering colors of autumn had at last overtaken the final sprig of jade in the trees, the sister stood in the backyard one evening listening to the birds. There had been a rainstorm, and they shrieked and chattered and sang so noisily she could bear it no longer. The words bubbled out of her before she could stop them. "I am not afraid. I'm going to find him. I will find my brother." The birds stopped singing at the words, but they did not fly away, and the sister went inside again, feeling the birds' eyes watching her as she went. Just before she closed the back door behind her, the sister drew a deep breath of the still warm night air. There was a faintly familiar smell on the wind, and she paused to dredge her memory for it. It was the first mystery wind of the season, 10 years after her brother had vanished. The wind blew around her, growing in strength and speed, and the leaves above her rattled like broken toys, fluttering and flapping. The sister turned her eyes up to the mountain, watching the trees bend and shift. The mystery winds had to come from somewhere on the mountain. That was what the kids always said to each other. "It's up there." The sister was older now, but remembered the shrewdness of her childhood, and felt that the moment was suddenly right. Instead of turning back toward home, She began to walk up the hill, into the woods, and toward the mountain where the mystery winds blew. Hours and hours she walked, and never stopped to rest or consider her direction. She was like an arrow, fired sure and straight, and never stumbled. At last she reached a very narrow, tall place, where there was a rock too large to walk around or past. She would have to climb it, and climb it she did, finding footholds and handholds in the dark, like an animal herself. She pulled herself up, limbs aching in protest, and finally reached the top of the great point, covered in moss and lichen. She stood up, slowly, and found that she was above the trees now, where the moon shone down through the clouds. It was so peaceful in the dark. She drew a deep breath of the night air. The mystery winds shivered through her, whispering and calling and pulling at her heart to go, to move forward. She could almost feel someone watching her, and a warm breath on the back of her neck. Or was that part real? The sister flinched and turned to look, and she was face to face with an enormous black bear, silent and staring. Her legs turned to jelly as the bear opened its mouth, and she saw the gleam of huge teeth in the moonlight. A faint noise began to rumble out of the bear's mouth. She staggered back and spun away, running as fast as she could. She swerved this way and that, thinking of the zigzag shape, but then there was no more space to run on the hilltop. She stumbled, trying to stop before she reached the steep edge on the far side. She toppled sideways and slid like a baseball player, then stopped, short. One foot dangled just over the side of the cliff, at least a 50-foot drop below her. She looked back sharply. The bear was standing over her, one gigantic paw pressed down, pinning her jacket to the ground as firmly as stone. The sister panted, trembling all over, and the black bear grunted as though it might laugh at her. Then it leaned closer and pulled its other paw across her body, gently, rolling her back from the edge of the cliff. When she was at last lying on her back a safe distance away from the sudden drop, the sister breathed hard to catch up with her racing heart. She looked at her scraped palms and saw her hands tremble. "Thank you for saving me." The bear sat down on its hind legs like a dog and stared at her. It did not seem interested in attacking, or even inspecting her further. It seemed calm, almost as if it had been expecting to meet her here. "Were you waiting for me?" she asked. Her heart pounded in her chest. The bear nodded its big head. The sister felt both exhilarated and terrified. "I'm looking for someone. My..." The bear nodded again before she had even formed the rest of the question. "You already know why I'm here." She swallowed back her nerves and drew a deep breath. "Are you my brother?" asked the sister. "Brother Bear?" The bear blinked at her, then lowered its head in apology. This was not her brother. "No? All right. It was worth asking anyway." The sister let out a shaky breath, both disappointed and relieved that her brother had not become a bear. "Do you know where he is?" she asked, determined, but no longer frightened. The bear turned and looked over its shoulder down the mountainside. "That way?" The bear got to its feet and gave a low grunt that ended in a huffing sigh, then began to walk away. The sister got to her feet and followed without hesitating. They walked together for some time, the bear and the girl. The woods were lit dimly by the moon, and the air was quiet, except for the occasional ripple of the mystery winds through the trees. At last the bear stopped, and the sister nearly collided with it in the dark. The bear looked back at her, eyes shining, and then looked ahead, pointing with its nose. The sister looked past the bear and saw that some 100 yards away was a magnificent stag. His antlers were newly sharpened, gleaming ivory in a patch of moonlight, and he stood staring at them like a statue in the dark. The bear nudged her with its big dark snout, and she jumped a little. "Another guide?" she asked. The bear nodded. "Thank you for helping me," she said, and the bear sat down to wait and watch. The sister looked over at the stag and hesitated. "This is not what I expected," she thought as she moved past the bear. She made her way across to the deer, who watched her, his ears swiveling as she came nearer. The stag did not seem upset by the bear's presence, nor by the sister's closeness. He simply stood still and looked at her with deep, dark eyes, his nostrils flaring. His fur grew thick like a mane about his neck and chest, tangled with burrs and leaves and little tendrils from the forest.
"You know who I am? Then you know what I seek. Are you my brother?"
The stag scythed his strong antlers in a curve above his head, then looked down at her again, and the sister knew it was not her brother.
"Please," she whispered. "It's been so many years, I have to know. Where is my brother?"
She walked cautiously forward, but she was not afraid. The deer came with her, walking patiently by her side in the dark. The sister glanced back, wondering if the bear would come too, but they had already gone too far, and the bear was out of sight. As she turned to look ahead, she caught a glimpse of glowing eyes in the dark. She stopped to look, but the eyes vanished. The sister almost asked the stag if he had seen the eyes, but as the stag did not seem able to speak, she did not bother. They walked on in silence, but a feeling of unease grew within her with each step they took. She glanced up at the stag in the dark once, and thought she saw the ivory bone of his slender skull gleaming in the moonlight, crowned with mighty antlers curving toward the sky. She blinked in surprise, and once more saw shaggy dark fur about his neck and the flicker of his slender ears.
"Calm down," she told herself. "You're imagining things."
They traveled in quiet, the stag and the girl. She kept her gaze forward, stealing glances out of the corners of her vision, fretting about the eyes she thought she'd seen. But there was nothing there. Nothing but trees and darkness. Something heavy shifted in the trees behind them, and the stag stopped walking.
"What is it?"
she whispered. The stag's ears swiveled in the dark, his eyes darting back and forth. She listened but heard nothing. Not even the mystery winds disrupted the silence, and the sister felt that even her own heartbeat was suddenly hushed. The stag tentatively lifted a hoof to take a single step forward. A branch snapped, and the stag nearly jumped out of his skin, whirling about and nearly knocking her to the ground. 3 pairs of those glowing eyes were moving through the trees behind them, yellow and round and pupilless. They moved swiftly, racing toward them as though they did not need to navigate the rocky terrain or dodge the trees. As they swept nearer, the wind picked up again, rattling and shuffling the leaves on the ground. The inky, bulbous shadows attached to the eyes were massive, bigger even than the bear had been. The sister could not make out what precisely they were, or whether they even had legs or faces, but those light bulb yellow eyes were empty and fixed on her.
"What are they?" the sister cried. "What do they want?"
The stag turned and bowed low, dipping his head, and the sister did not hesitate. She grasped the base of one of the ivory antlers and swung herself up onto the stag's shaggy, forest-tangled shoulders. Then he broke into a run, faster than she had imagined, and she held tight to his thick mane, squeezing her legs against his sides. The stag ran hard, leaping over stones and fallen trees, never looking back, and whatever trail they had been following before now was lost. The hulking shadows howled with voices like the wind, giving chase and reaching with dark tendrils to try and catch them. The stag's powerful legs carried the sister forward, and the wind whipped at them as fiercely as if they had been flying instead of fleeing. The sister clung to the stag's neck, breathless and white-knuckled.
"What happens if they catch us?"
she thought, and shut her eyes tightly against the wind. Then another voice joined the howling shadow creatures. Sharp, hearty yips and snarls filled the air, and the sister looked back. Wolves came hurtling out of the woods, tongues lolling from open grins of sharp, white teeth. They raced toward the black shadows, lunging and snapping, tails held high. One inky creature turned its yellow eyes on the wolves and swiped a thick, paw-like limb at them. The wolves dodged and danced out of reach. Their mocking voices began to multiply as more and more of the wild canines came streaming out of the dark. The sister almost laughed in relief as one of the giant dark shadows toppled over, disoriented by the wolves running circles around it. The stag's quick legs carried them farther and farther away, and the sister saw the hollow eyes blink shut into darkness as the wolves swarmed over them. The stag began to slow once they were out of sight. his sides heaving and his nostrils flaring. "Thank you," the sister told him. Her hands shook as she stroked the wiry fur. "Thank you for saving me." The stag huffed a breath of relief and flicked his ears back and forth, walking more slowly to catch his breath. "Are we very far off from where you were taking me?" The sister slid to the ground, looking around and saw how tall the trees had become, how thick the smaller bushes and bracken grew in this part of the wood. "It would have taken us a long time to get this far if we'd only been walking," she observed. The stag shook his head. "Is my brother an animal now?" She hoped not, but at least if she knew that much, she could maybe find a way to bring him home and cope. The stag gazed at her with what she thought might be sadness, but before the sister could ask another question, a branch above her rustled in the dark. She looked up and swallowed back a cry of amazement. There were large, predatory birds perched all around her, owls and small kites and large hawks alike. They gazed down at her from the trees with intelligent eyes, and she stood very still. A red-tailed hawk, the largest of the lot, moved to another branch, flashing his red tail feathers at her. He tilted his head and flew farther along, leading the way. The sister hesitated, looking back at the stag. The great deer was still panting from their run, but he lowered his head in acknowledgement. She nodded in return. "Thank you," she said again, then turned to follow the hawk. "Thank you for guiding me," the sister called softly to the hawk somewhere above her. "I'm looking for my brother." The hawk did not respond. She went on silently for a time and tried again. "I know what probably isn't so," she said, "but I have to ask, are you my brother?" There was no answer. She felt a little worried by this, and squinted up into the trees. She couldn't even see him anymore. "Hawk?" She stopped walking and looked around in concern. "Are you there?" The sister was completely alone, except for the mystery winds that blew from time to time. She hoped that nothing bad had happened to the hawk, and hoped even more that it would return to guide her if she lingered here long enough. The wind was soft, coaxing, and cold. She pulled her jacket around her tightly, shivering, and listened. There was a tiny sound from a few feet behind her, something like a polite cough. It startled her, but the sister held her ground. "Where is my brother?" the sister asked without turning. "I can take you to him." The voice was like the quiet darkness of a hiding place in a closed closet or under a bed. There were soft footsteps, and leaves rustled on the ground as the owner of the voice came quietly around to face the sister. She found it difficult to see him, as though in a dream where the moment you look directly at something, it vanishes. "Who are you?" she asked, curious. "I belong to him," said the voice, as if it was a stupid question. "What are you?" asked the sister. "I don't know," the voice honestly replied. "But I'm his, and if you want to find him, I can bring you there." Uncertainty shivered through her. The sister did not voice her doubts. Instead, she said, "Please bring me to my brother." "Come this way," said the voice kindly, and something that felt like a hand took hold of hers and led her forward in the dark. She walked for some time, led by the unseen voice with an unseen hand, through the dark that got deeper and darker with every step on the hard ground carpeted with crackling leaves. Then she saw light. The light up ahead was orange-yellow, warm and promising, and so she felt relieved to see it. They reached a clearing, and the light was not a fire as she had thought it to be, but a tall lantern on a lamppost in the middle of the woods. It was ornate and black iron, and the light inside was not a candle or a light bulb or a gas fire. It was simply light, glowing and unyielding. "Where are we?" she asked her guide, who could sort of be seen now and looked kind of like a person's shadow rather than an actual person. He was tall and thin, with prominent ears and a somber tilt to his head. "The front gate," he said, as if it was the only logical answer. Then something truly wonderful happened, and the sister did not know how to understand exactly what it was. The shadowy guide led her toward a gap between the two trees off to one side, where the light did not shine, and they stepped into the darkness itself. When they emerged on the other side, though on the other side of what, the sister did not know, they were in what looked like a small town. The trees were infinitely tall, winding cobblestone streets spread out before her, and there were people everywhere. The sister stared for a moment in disbelief. The road was normal cobblestone, and the people were normal-looking and real and well-dressed. Everyone about the place paused what they were doing to raise their hands in greeting as she was led forward by her guide, who looked less like a shadow and more like a skinny man in dark clothing now. At last the guide found their way to a fountain in the town square, and people were bustling into the streets to see whatever was about to happen. Her guide let go of her hand, and the sister felt suddenly quite anxious. "Here," said her dark guide, stepping back from her as though to make room. "Here is where your brother is." "I don't see him," the sister said, looking around at the other faces. "He's here," the guide said with certainty. "What's all this?" asked a bristly man nearby, gesturing to the sister. "Brought us another one?" The guide shook his head politely.
"Not exactly. This is his sister."
A ripple of concern and acknowledgement rushed through the crowds of people around her. The sister craned her neck, searching for her brother anywhere in the mass of people.
"His sister?" The man's jaw dropped. How
did I find this place?" interrupted the sister. "I felt the mystery winds blow, and I followed them here."
"You could not have made it this far without help," a woman said to her right, her smile bright but a little forced. "Surely you had help."
"The animals showed me the way, and this guide brought me the last leg of the journey. I have come to find my brother." This was met with more murmuring and wide-eyed shaking of heads.
"Your brother died," declared a voice in the crowd.
The sister turned, shocked by the words, and for a moment she faltered.
"No, he didn't," she replied. Her hands balled into fists as she tried to stay calm.
"Your brother got eaten by bears," insisted another voice.
"Wolves," suggested a third.
"Mistaken for a deer and shot by hunters," added a fourth.
"No," the sister insisted firmly. "He lived, and he was taken somewhere. He was taken here. Now bring me to him."
Her heart pounded. Something strange was going on. The faces of the people around her were blurring and changing.
"Your brother is not a little boy anymore," said someone.
"Your brother is not a little human anymore," said someone else.
An eager, anxious giggle rippled through the people. The crowd was nodding with wide, serious eyes, pressing closer and closer to her.
"I don't care," she cried, turning and turning, looking for him among the faces. "Let me see him! I want to find him!"
"Gone, gone, gone,"
some of the ghoulish people chanted happily.
"When the winds begin to blow, children climb the mountain," a sing-song voice cheered. "Then the darkness takes its hold when they reach the fountain."
"He's here! I know he's here!"
The sister felt dizzy, unable to focus clearly on any one face in particular. The people were like smoke, like shadows twining around her. Then, all at once, her vision cleared and she gasped, recoiling from the crowd. The people had changed, and the sight was both horrible and captivating. There were creatures that looked like goblins, with wrinkled, dark skin and hooked noses. Some looked like pixies, slender and sweet-faced despite the black holes they wore for eyes. There were things that looked part bird or part wolf, and some that were more like toothy monsters than real animals. There were some that seemed to be only pieces of things, like a pair of legs, or an arm, or a head. The sister's heart began to beat faster, and she tried to find her guide in the sea of shadowy faces and limbs that reached for her.
"Let me see my brother," she demanded, her voice strong despite her trembling hands.
"Why should we allow this?" said a new voice from behind her, and she turned to look up at the fountain.
There was a man seated on top of the fountain, seemingly without care for the water that gushed up and around it. It was not really a man, though, for all he appeared to be was bones. Long, thin, impossible bones, housed in a very old-looking black tailored suit. When the bones moved, the suit shimmered like the night sky, like shadows moving within shadows, and the sister felt cold all over. The bones looked at her, the way a king might look at a peasant. Everyone around the sister was quiet now, gazing up at the bones. Everything around them had changed too. The streets were not cobblestones, but more bones, and the buildings leaned at strange angles, like rough illustrations drawn by children's hands. The sister looked up at the man of bones, the skeleton sitting on the fountain.
"Who are you?" she asked, her voice small.
The skeleton made no answer.
"Please, I'm his sister," she said softly.
She told herself she was not afraid, but her heart pounded.
"I need to bring him home."
The skeleton did not move. The sister was running out of ideas.
"I came all this way to find him. Tell me what you've done with him. What has he become? What is this place? And who are you?"
"I am the king," said the skeleton, lifting his hand in a regal but still eerily comical way. "I am the king of the shadows, and I am the king of the dark. I am the one in the nightmares and the one in the dreams, and it is I who sends the animals walking. I am the fear and the nerves and the gasp of air, and I am the don't look behind you. I am the mystery winds, and I am the harvest moon. I am the..."
"It's just a story. And the don't be a scaredy cat. And the you're just a baby. And the stay here till I come back. I am the don't move or they'll see you. And the don't blink or you're dead. I am the holding your breath and the shutting your eyes and the where did he go? I am the All Hallows. I am the midnight and the black and the creaking floorboards. I am the lost. I am the searching. I am the lost."
"You said lost twice," said the sister, shivering in spite of herself.
"I am the lost," declared the skeleton fiercely. "I am the lost little boy. I am the dark woods at night. I am the bears hunting for their supper. And I am the ghost of the thing you lost."
The sister stared up at him. He was trying to frighten her, but his words were beginning to get twisted up, and she felt a deep pang of familiarity. "You're repeating yourself," she told him.
"Gone, gone, gone!" the ghouls cried around her. "The darkness takes its hold," declared the skeleton, "when they reach the fountain. And I reached it long ago."
"If you're lost, you should stay in one place until someone finds you," the sister said.
"I tried," the skeleton snarled. "I tried to stay put as long as I could, but it got dark and the winds began to blow and they left me there alone."
Hope soared through her. "I know you now," the sister told him. The skeleton stood up in anger, his bones quivering with fury.
"I am the king," he cried. "I am the king of all this."
He stepped down from the fountain in a tantrum and stood towering over the sister, impossibly taller than she.
"You are my brother," she insisted, with certainty.
"And you were never meant to be king of all this." She reached out and took the enormous bony hand in both of hers. Like a match being struck, he was no longer just bones, but had muscles and skin to go with it, and he was a tall, thin man with strange dark hair and deep, feeling eyes and a boy's face. He was tense with anger, but he did not pull his hand away. He looked down at his sister, and she saw the cold rage subside.
"I am the king," he said uncertainly.
"I have been the king." He raised his eyebrows, and his forehead wrinkled so many times that the sister had to smile. "Maybe," the sister said, squeezing his hand. But you are my brother, and you were my brother first. You weren't meant to be king of all this. Come home.
But he is the king!
One of the strange, misshapen ghouls cried in terror.
You can't just take him!
You'll have another king, she said firmly. She gave the ghoul a stern look. Don't worry about it.
But...
someone else cried, sputtering in disbelief.
But you can't!
No buts, commanded the sister, looking round at everyone. She and the brother began to walk away from the fountain.
No, no, no!
Several voices roared at once. The shadows bloomed and swarmed like birds unfurling their wings. The wind kicked up, cold and fierce, and the shades and specters opened their wide mouths and howled, advancing on her. Stop! The brother put out his free hand, long fingers spread wide. The ghouls paused, suspicion on their eyeless faces. I am going home now, he said. Stay here. I mean it. The sister squeezed her brother's hand. The next time you find a king, she said in her most serious voice, it must be a volunteer, not someone you pluck out of the woods for no reason. Now, all of you, go to bed. For a long moment, nobody moved. Then the brother frowned at the ghouls, and suddenly there was a great ruckus. There was moaning and grumbling and wailing and grousing, but the ghouls and monsters and shades and imps shuffled off into the dark, leaving the sister by the fountain with her very tall, very thin, very bewildered brother, who was so much older than he had been when he was lost in the woods. She looked up at him. Now, we're going home. He looked tired and uncertain, as if he were about to say something, but he could not think of the words. She waited for a moment to see if he would figure it out. He seemed dumbstruck, so she squeezed his hand again reassuringly. The sister led him back the way her shadowy guide had brought her, through the town, over the streets made of bones, through the front gate of blackness, and past the infinitely glowing lantern. They walked through the woods in silence, past the owls and the hawks and the kites, past the wolves and foxes and deer, past the bears at the top of the hill, and together they climbed the rock and back down the other side. They walked down the mountain, and the air was as still as summertime, without a hint of the mystery winds, without even a ruffle of leaves in the night. They walked and walked and walked, and at last they stepped out of the trees into the backyard of their white house from when they were children, and the moon was above them in the night, and the touches of the colorful dawn were coming over the horizon. "Welcome home," said the sister, and the brother looked very surprised to see their house. The sister found that her brother was now small again, as young as he'd been when he vanished. His blue eyes looked up at her from under a serious brow. "Thank you," said the little brother, and together they went into the house. In one version of the story, the little brother did not return, and the sister could not understand what had happened to her brother. In another version of the story, both of the first two boys made it home in one piece, and the police were called to search for the little brother, who, although the sister recalled it differently, was found just after dark and brought home to his family in their little white house at the foot of the mountain. When the mystery winds at last began to blow that year, the young brother and sister did not look up toward the mountain as the other children did, but they lowered their heads and kept on walking. They never spoke of what happened. A few years later, their family moved to the Midwest, and for the brother and the sister, that was the end of the mystery winds.
This has been The Brother-Sister Fable by Allison Grauer. Read by Allison Grauer. Audio production by K.T. Brisky. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Some sounds in this podcast provided by the Free Sound Project. This podcast is copyright 2016 under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 Unported License. Find out more about Allison Grauer at dreamstobecome.com. Thanks for listening.